What up, Long Beach? We've actually got good news on this episode of our weekly podcast that covers the Long Beach schools, their sports teams, and our community at large. As always, we are the 562.org, which is myself, JJ Fiddler, and the other two amigos, Mike Arabasio and Tyler Hendrickson.
I'm very happy to be a third of the amigos.
Well, they're three great comedians, so you can't really lose.
Can I be Chevy Chase?
Oh,
he's nice. One of the amigos, Dibs. Right?
Okay, you called it. I'll be Steve Martin. Mike, you know who you are. You're the short man.
Who's the third one?
Martin Short.
No, it's Martin Short. Yeah. I'll take Martin Short. That's fine. I think I'm more of a Chevy and Tyler's more of a Martin Short, to be completely honest with you.
Well, we'll have to figure that out on another podcast because this one's jam-packed.
This podcast brought to you, as always, as part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post. Thanks so much to our buddies at lbpost.com. A ton of sports, education, everything else content up at lbpost.com. Go check that out right now.
We also got to shout out our readership. Thank you so much to all of our subscribers. That is the only way that we continue to do what we do here at the 562.org. So if you have yet to subscribe, go ahead and smash that subscribe button. Get on our Patreon page. Give us whatever you can. No contribution is too small. You can enter to win some free swag. We got another giveaway to a lucky subscriber. So get in there, be in the running to get a 562 shirt, stickers, and buttons and all that. And we will love you forever. We love all of our subscribers. Thank you guys so much for your support. We also have a big fundraising initiative coming up this week, Long Beach Gives. Big fundraising event for all nonprofits across Long Beach. We are grateful to be included this year in the Long Beach Gives initiative. And so we will have more information in the days ahead. Early giving starts on the 17th of September and the big Long Beach Gives Day is September 24th. So if you have some money that you're willing to give out to some nonprofits in need, we hope that you please consider the 562.org as one of those nonprofits. And of course, any donation would be tax deductible. And finally, we want to shout out Long Beach Limited, a new clothing line of Long Beach gear. A portion of the proceeds from sales from those shirts will go to the 562, have already gone to the 562. So if you're looking for some Long Beach gear, the Long Beach Limited does support the 562, as well as local high schools as well. The recent shirt for Long Beach Poly will have a donation going to Poly's ASB, and more schools will be included in the future. So be sure to follow at Long Beach LTB on all the socials.
As we mentioned up top, we've got good news, and it's coming from Long Beach State. We were on our other podcast, the LB Fee Show, with Long Beach State Athletics Director Andy Fee on Monday, and he told us that a two-week plan is being set into place for men's and women's college basketball to come back at Long Beach State as the first sports that we would be covering since March. Of course, that would have to include a lot of negative COVID-19 tests, and they're going to do it in phases, but if everything goes as planned, fingers crossed, Long Beach State basketball could be practicing outdoors by October 1st. Guys, we got to take the good news where we can get it, right?
This is like beyond what you just said. Like, take the good news where you can get it is like finding out that your oil change costs $40 instead of $50 or something. This is like 36-point font, flashing neon lights, like the best sports news we've had in literally 6 months, that not only are people moving towards competing, but there's like a plan in place and a timeline. I was sitting there grinning like an absolute child as Andy Fee was breaking it down for us, because it's just so good to hear about a restart plan that has some oomph behind it and that sounds feasible.
It's also so close. It's right now. It's not like, hey, in 2 months, we're going to do this or that. It's like in 2 weeks, after a lot of testing on campus through the Student Health Center, we're going to know whether or not we have it, and then we're off.
But it is important to remember that, you know, because we have other data from the state, from the county that is trending, and specifically in the city as well, that's trending in the right direction, that does need to continue in order for us to start this and then continue this. And it is very easy for one person's actions to go from, hey, we have a testing plan, we're going to keep these student athletes protected, and we're going to be able to do this, to all of a sudden, we're an SEC football program. And now, as Ed Orgeron says, his entire team essentially has had COVID. And it seemed like that was the plan for some of the other schools, that they just wanted everyone to get it early so that then they could move on. That's not going to work. That isn't a plan.
Says so, you.
Yeah, that's not a plan. That's a reaction.
And I can confidently say that the people making the decisions will not allow that to be what happens. We're not going to try to infect the entire Big West so that we can then play fall sports. So just keep that in mind. Yes, there's good news, but it's because of the actions that people have been taking to be responsible, to listen to science, and let's not push the envelope. We did that in July. We got a little ahead of ourselves, and it made us regress. So let's try to keep this momentum moving in the right direction.
Ultimately, that comes down to the people on campus. That comes down to the coaches and the players who are already in the dormitories. We had Romel Manziel on the show, on the LB Fee show, so make sure you listen to that. And he's talking about he's spending his sophomore year in the dorms, basically by himself. Other than going to class online and maybe getting outside for a run or to get some shots up, he's just eating and playing video games. I mean, it's not jail, but he doesn't get to do much other than the job at hand.
I wasn't going to make the comment to him because I didn't feel that it was appropriate, but it was like, you're straight up doing prison workouts. Like, he was just straight up. He's like, I sleep, I study, I do push-ups, and I do sit-ups. And I was like, you're literally in jail. Like, and I understand, like, you know, obviously the school is doing what they can, the players are doing what they can. But, yeah, I mean, it's just not a good – situation, you know, I mean, it's not great for the kids. It's they're basically going to be in kind of jail as part of getting this rebooted because they do need that quarantine period. And obviously we've all kind of been through something similar to that. But yeah, it's unique. You know, it becomes more apparent with every conversation that we have that we'll all be telling stories about this 6 months to a year, year and a half for the rest of our lives.
Well, and certainly what we're asking of them is unreasonable, and it's fair to acknowledge that while also saying, hey, we know this sucks and this isn't really fair and it's not your fault, but if we want to play games, this is what we all have to sacrifice and do, and we're not suggesting that it's good or that we're or anybody's happy about it. There is just no good answer or good solution. So
yeah, I'm not even suggesting that it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just if we're going to do it, this is the only way it's going to happen. You know, Andy Fee, I really appreciate it on the show, made the point that like, we're not going to hold it against anyone in any sport that chooses to opt out or take a year off school or whatever, you know, because there are people, you know, we've talked about this as Laker fans, like, you know, this last series for the Lakers would have been a lot less stressful if Avery Bradley's playing, but I've been really happy as a Lakers fan because you both know Lakers fans can be absolutely unreasonable a lot of the time. And I've been really happy that I feel like on the whole, with the exception of maybe one or two isolated, you know, dumbasses, everyone's pretty much been responsible of like, hey, man, everyone's making the decisions they got to make. If you have to opt out this year from high school or college or the pros, make the decision you have to make because it is a real decision.
And then the decisions made by the people I was talking about on campus affect not just this basketball season, but it affects everyone else, too. The fall and spring sports kind of waiting in the wings to see what happens with basketball, how the university handles if they get positive tests or how they're actually testing in the first place. They can do 30 basketball players. That's easy to do on campus, but Long Beach State has almost 400 student athletes. So they're not just going to be able to shuttle them through the student health center like that. This is a big deal. This is like an epic story, right? At the end of every epic story, when the battle's over, the door is opened, and then one person has to volunteer to walk out first to see if it's safe. That's college basketball right now. So college basketball at Long Beach State really has a huge responsibility going forward. And obviously, you're going to find all the updates on how they're doing at the562.org, where you're also going to find some great stories, including stuff about all of the Long Beach products playing NFL football.
We had three starting on Monday Night Football. That's how crazy it was. We had two defensive starters in that Broncos Titans game with Jayon Brown and Jarrell Casey, who were teammates last year. And then Juju obviously playing for the Steelers as well, and certainly getting his fair share of headlines and attention for two touchdowns, two incredible celebrations. That's what we expect from Juju. Obviously one of the most exciting young stars in the league. And I just wanted to point out, as he's going into his fourth season, how young the guy is, and he's 18 days older than Joe Burrow, who made his first start ever. Meanwhile, Juju's in a contract year for his second contract, which, as I always point out, is the argument for playing your kids up as opposed to holding them back.
Well, and it was so nice to see Juju back having fun again. You know, just one of the best personalities in all of professional sports right now. I mean, I know we're a little bit biased, but I mean, I think that's hard to argue at this point, you know?
He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated for having a great personality. So I feel like the bias comes out of it. But as JJ mentioned, 13 Long Beach products in the NFL, a state best 7 from Long Beach Poly. Cal High Sports and LA Times have been floating around a number of 5. Everyone's forgetting about Quentin Bell, basically because he barely played at Poly and is now an NFL guy who played and got tackles for the Bucks this year. And then I'm also counting Iman Marshall on the injured reserve for the Ravens, because our belief has always been that if your bills are being paid by an NFL team, I don't care if you're designated as IR or whatever else. I mean, you're on the Ravens. So seven guys from Poly, the most of anyone in the state. No one else in the state with more than three. So certainly another great showing for the Jackrabbits. And, I want to shout the whole Moore League out, though. Lakewood's got two guys in the league. Compton's got a guy. Dayton Jones, with the new rules, was able to P-squad this year, even though it's his 10th year. Obviously, Jordan has got John Ross. Wilson's got Joel Batonio, who's arguably the best of all the Long Beach products in the NFL right now. The Moore League, people say whatever they want about the Moore League. The Moore League's got a good number more NFL players currently than the Trinity League does. And the Trinity League has allegedly been dominating again, for about 8 years now. And it's still the case that the public school league in Long Beach, California, has got more players than your modern days and everybody else. So shout out to the Moore League.
And we're going to enjoy it a lot while it lasts. Tyler, you've also got a great story on the website this week about the Salvation Army.
Yeah, I do. There's a community center that's already constructed, but they're adding some athletics facilities to it. That construction is currently underway over at the corner of Long Beach Boulevard and Spring Street, just north of Signal Hill, on the border of District 6 and 7. And it's going to be a great facility. Just looking at the mock-ups of it, it's going to be an NBA-sized basketball court. And, because sometimes those professional teams require an NBA-sized court, so there's a chance that we'll get some clinics with Lakers, Clippers, some other professional teams could come to Long Beach, and that would be a great facility there for the community. Also a workout room, a walking track for any of the walking clubs. There'll also be a soccer field there that they're working on getting a turf field constructed. So it'd just be great for the city to have those athletic facilities for the youth that needs it. The Croc Center, we obviously remember from it's been a decade since that fell through. And so this is a continuation of that, and having something maybe not quite as big, but something that can still help the community. And they'll also be doing some distance learning program to help families that need some help with distance learning. Because as we've covered on this show, that is something that's going on right now, and it's a very real concern for families. So the Salvation Army doing their part to try to step up and provide some other options for families who need it.
While you're there at the 562.org checking out those stories, please read the story about former Lakewood football coach Jimmy Nolan. We've got two stories up there. Both of them include a link to a GoFundMe page that is benefiting his family after they were involved in a tragic car accident. Jimmy Nolan was still in California, but his family in South Carolina was in the accident, and his youngest child lost her life. So they really need the community support, and impressively, the community has stepped up. Over $300,000 raised already for the Nolan family. So join that group and donate what you can. Our interview coming up on this episode of What Up Long Beach is with St. Anthony football coach Mario Morales, who also works at Lakewood High School. He's a member of the administration over there. So he's got a really interesting look at what goes on when you're dealing with situations that are changing every day, like practice at St. Anthony. They were able to get back out there after getting all the permits signed and dealing with all that stuff. And then, of course, the fires and the air quality has stopped them. So stick around for that interview with Mario Morales.
Before we get to our special guest, obviously, we have to take a minute to shout out Naples Rib Company. They're doing everything they can to give people the best barbecue in the city of Long Beach. It's been hot as heck outside. It's been smoky as heck. I wouldn't say that the ash makes me hungry for barbecue specifically, but it's certainly still that summer weather. So we've been making our trips down to Naples Rib Company to get it to go order, bring it back home, close our eyes, and pretend that the world is normal and that everything is right and delicious in the universe.
We are now joined by our special guest, St. Anthony football head coach Mario Morales. Coach, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. You're actually at Lakewood right now at your day job, quote unquote.
Yeah, I'm here till about 3:30, 4 o'clock throughout the day, so we're winding things down.
So then you head over to St. Anthony. What's your day-to-day been like?
Well, recently, as of last week, it's been a Tuesday, Thursday conditioning workout for us from 5 to 6:30. That's the good news. The bad news is in 2 weeks we've only been able to do it one time, which was last Tuesday, because of the fires and the air quality. So, but our schedule is Tuesday, Thursdays from 5 to 6:30. Weather or air quality permitting.
Yeah, it's been the year that won't quit in terms of everything in the world trying to get in the way of kids getting out there and having fun, it feels like. My question for you on getting those conditioning workouts set up, I know that the school district went through quite a bit with the city to sort of get the permission and the structure of those. You're in a really unique position because you are the coach of the only private school football team in the city, and you also are an LBUSD administrator, obviously. What was the process like for you guys? Is it basically like copy-paste everything that was sent to, you know, the Moore League, or what steps did you guys have to go through to get approval and all that stuff for the workouts you're doing?
Well, that's interesting because we have so many agencies we listen to. Local level, with the city, you know, we're blessed to have our own health department here in Long Beach, as we all know. County, state, and even the archdiocese, for that matter. So we have a lot of people that we really have to communicate with to see exactly what we can and cannot do. I've been fortunate with Chris Morrison. He's been ahead of the ball game and really keeping me up to date, what's going on, what to anticipate, and things like that. So from a communication standpoint, knowing what we can and can't do, that's been good. So we're just LA County at this point, and we're following those guidelines, which, as we all know already, it's you got to stay anywhere from 6 to 8 feet away from each other, masked up. And so we're doing everything we can to make that happen. That's on a good day when the air is great, but we just got to sit back and wait now. But yeah, as far as the guidelines, Chris has been great with me and giving me all the information we need on a daily basis.
Chris Morrison, the athletic director at St. Anthony. Go ahead, Tyler.
Coach, I wanted to kind of ask you about kind of how, from your perspective, how the players, you know, your student athletes are dealing with all the all of what we've been dealing with, obviously with COVID, and then now the air quality is further making it difficult to practice. I mean, what do you say to the players, and what's their kind of mindset for just, it seems like, rolling with the punches week after week, month after month? There's something new that they're having to kind of work through, and it's, you know, they're young adults, you know, we're a little older than them, you know. How are they dealing with it, and what kind of message are you trying to convey to them?
Well, what we've noticed, it's the waiting, anticipation, and anxiety. That's like the first thing, like, hey, when are we going to start? We're hearing July 20th at the CIF, and we're hearing, you know, October 5th. They get all these days thrown at them, so they start this waiting and anticipation, and then there's some anxiety that's involved in that. And then the next step is, like, the excitement of starting. Okay, hey, we're going to start up on this certain day, and they get all fired up, and they're ready to go, as kids do. And we start, and then, of course, the disappointment of stopping. So that's kind of been the phases that we've experienced with them. And it's hard to see them go through that because, as a coach, you want to stay optimistic, as we all do. Stay upbeat with them and say, hey, this is a temporary thing, and we'll get through it, and we're going to do it the best way we can. So everything's been positive. We preach that to them. But at the end of the day, like you said, Tyler, you know, we're all adults, and we understand things probably a little bit better in terms of getting through some adversity. And but we just try to stay positive with them to help them get through it, because at the end of the day, I think the most important part that they're lacking is that social, emotional well-being. And I shared, I believe with you, Tyler, when you came out to see us back in June, that the first day we had in practice, it was funny because one of the coaches had commented, like, these kids just won't shut up. They just keep talking. And I said, you know what? They haven't seen each other. And all their communication, the majority of their communication, has been electronically or, you know, with no true emotion or affect. And here they are. So let them talk. Let them be kids again, if you will, or teenagers. So we have to be sensitive on that end, and I think we have been. But again, just the starting and stopping piece has been hard for them.
You mentioned the adults. How are the parents reacting? Have you gotten any of them who maybe have been a little bit reticent of sending their kid back outside?
JJ, we've had one parent who had pulled their kid back in June and July when we were getting started up again. And we understood it. There was no or nothing negative with that. We just said, hey, we understand where you are, so we're good with that. We're obviously going to be positive about it. We don't know the history. There could be something maybe in the family that they experienced, or some concerns or health issues. So we're never going to question that. So literally we had one. But most of the parents, if not all, have been fine and understanding, and they get it, and they've been really supportive. So whenever we're getting ready to start, we'll tell them again, and I'm sure they'll be ready to help in any way they need.
I think it's interesting the conversation about what we should and shouldn't be doing and allowing as a society is a conversation that has a little bit of a learning disorder. I mean, it's just all over the place constantly, you know? And my question to you is, what do you hear from your parents? Like, do you think if you took them a plan right now and said, we're going to go full bore with a football, full contact pads and footballs, sharing equipment, whatever, on October 1st, if you sign this, do you think that 100%, 90% would sign it? Do you think no one would sign it? Like, where do you think your team's parents sort of land on that spectrum, I guess?
I haven't thought of it that way, Mike, but that's a great question because there's so many factors involved. But I think personally that 90% of them would sign it. We have kids, obviously, that love the game of football, and a lot of that's tied to their parents and the experience they had. So you have a lot of support from the parents on that end. I really like our parent group and structure because a lot of them are very knowledgeable about the game of football, which tells me they're either involved in it or always paid close attention to it. So that being said, they would support, I believe, to get this thing going. Hey, let's sign the waiver. Let's get this thing started. Because I think now, with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, if you look at what's happened there, where all of a sudden they're not playing at all, now they said, oh, hey, maybe we can. I think adults, parents are now looking at that and saying, wow, these kids, it's hurting them. Again, going back to what we said earlier about the social emotional piece and the growth of these kids. And I'm a little concerned about the long-term effects, but so going back to that question, I think the majority of the parents would sign the waiver, not just to play the game, but to get their kids back in a routine, feeling good again about themselves and growing as a person. Because at the end of the day, that's the most important thing.
Coach, when you guys do get going in a semi-regular way, it's probably going to be in January. So when you're considering the schedule, not just the games you're going to play, which we'll talk about in just a second, how do you create a schedule that somewhat resembles spring football, the flow into summer football, maybe giving them a little time off before you come back for a hell week in maybe late December?
So what we've done is we all sat together sat down together as a staff and looked at the dates and so on. And we just worked backwards from December 14th and we've created the schedule. And right now we are in our 7-week phase, if you will, of practice, which is our second week. And again, we've only practiced once. We thought this would be our fourth practice starting tomorrow. But nonetheless, it's a 7-week cycle. So that's what we've been doing. It's kind of a pseudo spring and summer mixed together. And then we're going to be off for 2 weeks, then come back and start a true summer workout, give them a couple weeks off, and then come back December 14th and get after it. So we do have it all down on paper. Obviously, it's in pencil. But we're going to react the best way we can, and our kids are going to be willing to do whatever it takes, as are the coaches. But that's what we have right now. We do have a schedule set up, and hopefully we'll see it through.
Once you get on the field, you're going to be taking on a lot of other local Long Beach teams, and we just absolutely love that. We call it the double dip. We get to cover a lot more kids who come and look at the coverage. It's amazing. And we've talked to you pretty much every time you've had Wilson on the schedule about that and playing those local teams and how important it is to you and building your program.
It is. I'm a big community guy like you guys are. I love Long Beach. When I came out here and checked out Long Beach when I was doing my college recruiting and stuff like that, I'd never been to the east side of Long Beach or even Belmont Shore, that whole area, but I fell in love with it and I've been here ever since. And I believe that the relationships that we've created throughout football in the city of Long Beach are very, very strong and I'm very proud of that. Met some really great guys like Ziggy, you know, Ziggy, as you know, and then part of their staff over there. We all know each other. So to me, as I get older, I appreciate these games a lot more. Not that I didn't earlier on in my career, but I really appreciate them because they're good guys, good programs. I think it's healthy for the community. I want to create that type of a if you want to call it a friendly rivalry or a healthy rivalry, I think is probably better said. But Wilson definitely figures into that. You know, we now have Milliken and, you know, Romeo doing a great job over there. They're ready to do some big things at Milliken, in my opinion. Unfortunately, we will not be playing Lakewood this year, but we have scheduled them for our scrimmage. So, you know, Scott and I, obviously, we know each other. So he's another guy I really respect a lot. And I just want to stay connected to those guys, not just because of our relationship, but because truly of the Long Beach relationship and the community, how we're all going to come together. And I really think that the more we play each other, the more we can show everybody what kids we have in our city and that we're really proud of the way they play and regardless of the school they go to.
Coach, it's fun for that part of these interviews where we actually just get to talk about schedules and sports a little bit and pretend that that's something we can all focus on completely. Tell us about your team. You know, what does your team look like? Obviously, you guys have some big losses to replace, but what's the team look like? Who are you expecting to have a big year when we get going in January?
Well, we like a couple guys, and Sonia, I think it starts with him. Sonia Pugh just had a monster season for us on both sides of the ball last year as a sophomore, and he's gotten bigger. He's a rugby kid, as we know. And I just really want to see him play this year with some other kids as well. But, you know, we're blessed to have him and his cousin, AK, which is Anakin Apu, as well as going to be able to help us this year, as is, you know, Juju, Pooney, who those three guys will be playing linebacker for us. They're all juniors. We're excited about them. We obviously have a quarterback that checked in from Canada via, you know, Bosco and Saddleback Valley Christian in Joey Haworko. So we're excited to see these guys, see how the pieces of the puzzle are all gonna fit together. That's why we're really hoping this season happens. We feel with those guys, from a leadership standpoint alone, are going to do some really good things for us and help us to get to where we wanna get to, which is being ultra competitive again. We've slipped the last couple of years. But I believe that if we're all healthy and we're able to play in January, that these kids are going to have some big seasons for us. So we're excited offensively, defensively, and even the kicking game. We're really excited about this season.
Well, and speaking of seasons where you got where you wanted to go to, we recently relived the 2016 CIF Championship for St. Anthony in one of our 5-6-2 Classic videos. Hopefully you got the chance to check that out. But if you wouldn't mind, give us some perspective from you on that team and what made them and that season so special for you with the Saints.
Well, I think it started early on in the summertime. These kids were so driven about winning, and they weren't just talking about winning. They were talking about winning the ring. And first time in my career that I ever heard players talking that early about doing that. And I'm an old school guy, and I'm like, hey, don't talk about that. We don't do that. You know, you just focus on today and get better and work hard and all that. But they, when they said it, though, they were sincere and they meant it. And I can tell that these kids were a pretty special group. And as you can see, as the weeks went on, you know, we were 3-2 at one point, but that leadership just emerged. These guys were hungry and they would never complain. They continued to work harder to the point where we got onto that run. And, you know, with the unfortunate end there at the state championship, nonetheless, it was a great year. It was great to see that again on the 5-6-2. Matter of fact, believe it or not, BJ Busby FaceTimed me today and it was great to hear from him. He's out test driving a car, and one of my ex-teammates in high school that played at San Diego State was an All-American down there, a guy named Steve Lauder, is selling the car. And so it was pretty funny. He goes, hey, Coach, I got Steve Lauder here from high school, you know. So it was great to see BJ at FaceTime and obviously my buddy. But it's just cool to stay in contact with these guys, and they're all winners. They're all doing great things, not just BJ, but the whole team. I just hear some cool things happening with those guys. Just a great group of solid guys, and which they're now men. But that was a great time, and I really appreciate you guys showing that again. That was really cool, and I get goosebumps every time I see it.
Absolutely. It also scratched the itch because we've been missing football so much. We just started doing these recalls. We finally get to see some on Sunday. Did you watch any NFL?
I did. I tried to watch as much as I could. I don't know if the other coaches are in the same boat as I am, but it's hard for me to sit through a game completely. I look at it from a coaching standpoint, and I shouldn't. So I'll watch some things, and then I'll kind of get away, and I'll go back and kind of see what they're doing. You know, we're kind of the nerdy guys that watch it. And, you know, what are they lining up in, and what's their tendencies? You look at it as a coach, and my wife looks at me like, what are you doing? You know, well, whatever. It is what it is. But, yeah, I got a chance to watch some games. There's some, to my surprise, there was some pretty good football, even though there weren't some preseason games and not the typical preparation they've had in the past. But I thought there was pretty good football in spite of.
Yeah, working on a Sunday, nobody wants to do that. You're right. Thank you so much for taking the time, Coach. We really appreciate it. Best of luck with everything, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it, and thank you for having me.
Our thanks to Mario for coming on the show. Always great to hear from Coach. Let's instill a sense of normalcy with our speech and debate segment. Hey, everything else in the world is falling apart. Once in a lifetime things are happening. But the Clippers choked off the Western Conference semifinals. So there is one thing that's functioning exactly the way it's supposed to, even in 2020. Boys, I have to say, I haven't had that much fun watching a team lose maybe ever in my life.
It shows.
That much fun watching a team lose, I guess, without the added enjoying watching a team win. Because obviously watching the Lakers beat the Celtics in a game seven is like a double whammy. So, yeah, if you're talking of just watching it to watch the world burn, it's almost as if the Clippers were offended by the Washington football team's efforts to do whatever it is they're doing. And they were like, oh, you wanna come out here and be yourself? Just wait till we show you what we got for you. And they really outclipped themselves, to be honest with you.
It's such an epic collapse. Nobody today is telling the story of this incredible Denver Nuggets team.
Right, that won six consecutive elimination games in an NBA playoffs.
Nobody's singing the storyline, you know, sometimes you're just on the wrong side of history. Nobody's saying that.
Only because your own history is just so overwhelming for being the victim, you know? It's like they overrode the story. But the Nuggets have been incredible, and they will have certainly a chance to make their run much more memorable. Because even if they rattle off back-to-back 3-1 comebacks, that's incredible. But if they don't make the finals, the reverberation of that for years to come is non-existent.
No one remembers the good storyline from the loser of the conference championship games from 6 years ago. You know what I mean? You're absolutely right to that point. I just want to say that as a Lakers fan, and we have three lifelong Lakers fans on the show, like, I've never felt negatively about the Clippers ever in my life until this year.
Whoa, what?
Like the last couple years. The last couple of years. Because for me, I mean, it was just like, it's not a rivalry, right? Like I always tell people, I went to way more Clippers games as a kid than Lakers games. Like they would give you Clippers tickets for $5 at Ralph's. Like,
same.
That's how I saw Charles Barkley. That's how I saw Michael Jordan. Like those were the games we could afford to go to. And dude, like I love the Lob City Clippers. I was like, this is great. Like the Clippers, they're like, they have a little bit of a team. Our friends who are Clippers fans have something to root for. And then they put out these billboards, we're from the streets. The Kawhi Leonard New Balance ad that like, this is his city, you know? And it's just like, pardon me, Los Angeles Clippers, get to a conference finals first, bro.
So Mike's not actually mad at the Clippers. He's just mad at the 22-year-old intern whose job it is to pitch marketing ideas for teams and sneakers.
No, that's not where that came from. There's no way that's where that came from. That's much higher on the food chain. That's an organizational decision to try to take away the Lakers' footing somehow or assert that, like, you know, they're coming for LA and going to be, it's like if the Angels did it, the Dodgers fans would just be.
And like, I wouldn't mind if the Angels did it. And when they did it, I laughed when they put Los Angeles on their name. As a Dodger fan, I'm a Giants hater. I don't really care about the Angels. As a Laker fan, I'm a Celtics hater. I don't really care about the Clippers. They're not my bother.
But this is different to me. And number one, there is some residual hatred of Doc Rivers from being the Celtics coach left over for me.
Not of Rondo.
But no. Well, you know, you do what you got to do in the Montagues and the Capulets battles. But it's become personal for me because the Clippers, as an organization, really are trying to make fetch happen. You know what I mean? Like they spent money to give free backpacks to every kid in LA County. So my son comes home from school one day with a Clippers backpack. He goes to the YMCA. They're sponsoring every YMCA league in Southern California. So he comes home from his first basketball practice. He's got Clippers jerseys and shorts. So for me, it's become a little bit like, you rattled the cage and now I'm happy, you know, that this happens to you.
Mike, you're mad at laundry. You're getting mad at laundry. You're booing a shirt.
Delighted. I'm pleased as punch. Yeah.
I just don't see it as threatening, and their performance recently reminds me that it's not that threatening.
I'll also say, I think that there's guys on their team that are easy to root against, you know, and I wouldn't count Kawhi as one of those people. I think some of the stuff with, like, he and Paul George being, like, from L.A. or L.A. guys doesn't really hold up as someone who was, you know, born and raised in Long Beach. Like, IE is really a different place, and it's, like, I don't have any, like, personal animosity towards them, but that's another part of this storyline that was, like, kind of annoying and all the buildup. And so, but, like, you know, guys like Pat Bev that live to be annoying, you sort of have to take some delight when that kind of guy just ends up kind of falling on his face in the same way that his team has always done that. It's crazy repetition of history.
The storyline that sticks out to me and reminds me of something that our mutual friend Dan told me. You win by how you play the game. Nobody remembers all of the times that LeBron won against the Celtics. All I remember is that horrible final game where it looked like he quit against the Celtics. And it kind of looked like that for the Clippers. And we know some fans, our guy, Ryan Zumalin, who was more worried about, hey, just throw your best five out there. Just put it all on the line. What have you got to lose? They lost with how they played these last six games as much as they lost the way they played the last six games. That obviously lands on the coach, but I got to be honest, I am not surprised that Steve Ballmer isn't going to fire Doc Rivers, because as a guy who has played and won the stock market, this is a classic stock market move. You don't sell the stock when it's at its lowest. You wait and try to build it back up, and then you sell it. So I wouldn't be surprised if Doc Rivers is not coaching the Clippers during the playoffs next season, whenever and however that happens. But I am not surprised that he did not get fired right now and is going to get back into that year, because he's Steve Ballmer's guy. And Steve Ballmer's the type of dude who's going to dance around on the stage and show you how much he cares about the people who work for him.
What an absolute delight.
Right. Well, I don't know. I feel like maybe chapter 11 has already come on the Doc Rivers era. But, you know, maybe he's not the Zune of coaching the Clippers. I don't know. We'll see. I certainly was expecting him to be fired after that, but I'm also not an NBA owner. So
let's assume we know what the rosters are going to look like for the Clippers next year. Who do you want the coach of the Clippers to be if you're a Clippers fan?
That's really good. I mean, I just think ultimately you need
Tyronn Lue.
I think, to be honest with you, I'm not in favor of coaches like Tom Thibodeau, guys that are like real me first, rigid, disciplinarian coaches. But I do actually think a coach that would scoff at the idea of taking games off to wait for the playoffs, like not because you need to, but just because you feel like it. Like, I think someone who's a little bit more of a hard ass would have benefited that team.
Mike D'Antoni's going to need a job.
You know, you want to throw an offense together that calls for more Paul George and Kawhi bricking threes in the fourth quarter. Sounds terrific as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the silver bullet answer to that. I think obviously someone that can work on the chemistry of the team. It seemed like that was a big issue. I mean, obviously the talent is there, but there were some internal struggles. So I don't know who's the right answer to fix some of that. And also for Doc Rivers specifically, yes. Nothing against the guy as a human being. I think he's a great guy. And so I just want to make
absolutely
that clear.
Not. Great guy.
But just the coaching wise, that's a tough one to overcome.
You need a coach good on chemistry. How freaking mad would you be, Mike, if Phil Jackson came back to coach the Clippers?
That would honestly be like the funniest thing ever to me.
It would be like, I don't even know how I'd react to that. That would be,
I wouldn't even be upset about that. It would just, I could see myself like game 64 of the season, still laughing the way you're laughing right now. Like, couldn't be able to breathe. Third quarter, 4 minutes left in the third quarter. They cut to Phil Jackson on the Clippers bench and I'd just start cracking up.
Phil would have to wear shades because the lighting at Clippers games is so much brighter than the lighting at Lakers games. So I just picture him on his stoop over there with his big, you know, puffed up seat, just like some of Jack's sunglasses on, just like not really paying attention, just legs crossed, waiting for the playoffs. That would be hilarious.
Yeah, he's just going to zoom in until they get to the playoffs. All right, we got to get out of here. Another episode in the books. This is What Up Long Beach. We come to you every week, giving you everything from the Long Beach schools, their sports teams, and the community at large. So thank you to everybody at Long Beach Post and the 562 for getting this stuff out, all the stories that you see, and everything that we're doing as Long Beach sports get back underway. You're going to find all of the news right here. For Mike and for Tyler and for JJ. We'll talk to you next week, Long Beach. Stay safe.